Hey, good evening once again. I didn't say it up at the top of the hour here, but my name is Sten. I'm the pastor here at Mid-Current Church. And let me just say again, I feel like I could say it all night. We're so thrilled that you would be here with us tonight, that you choose to spend a portion of your Christmas with us. If I asked you about your most favorite Christmas, your favorite Christmas memories, what comes to mind for you? What memories, what thoughts flood your head? For me, it's Christmas when I was a kid. My cousin's in Chicago. I absolutely loved Christmas. I had a large extended family, and we spent, you know, 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 days together packed inside a big house on Chicago's north side. Most years, there was like 30-plus of us packed in there together, sleeping on couches, sleeping on air mattresses, sleeping on spare squares of carpet, wherever you could find space, upstairs, downstairs, in the basement that somehow got called the dormitory, wherever you could find space, that's where you were. There was tons of people, there was tons of food, tons of presents, there was nonstop activity, nonstop eating, unending conversations that went late into the night, and unending games of Risk. That felt like they went on even longer. Somehow Risk is synonymous with Christmas in my mind. This literally was, every year as a kid, it was like the Super Bowl of family gatherings. Now, I know some of you are hyperventilating right now at just the thought of spending this much time in this close proximity to your extended family, but I loved it. I mean, I loved every single moment of it. We used to beg my mom, in fact. We used to beg her if we could go early. The whole deal started on Christmas Eve, but we used to beg her to go early. I remember these days so vividly. We had the time of our lives, me and my cousins, the absolute time of our lives. I can remember the epic Nerf wars that we used to have. One person would hide behind the Christmas tree and the oversized chair, and the other person would hide behind the swiveling lazy boy in the coffee table. I can remember the home run derbies we'd have with the little miniature bats and yellow Nerf balls. We'd play in the back room. The window in the back room was huge, and it was the outfield, and the very top window pane was the designated home run line, and so we'd be hitting little yellow, you know, mini Nerf balls against the back window. We used to play this game called, I can't even believe we did this. We used to play this game called Stomper in front of my cousin's stone fireplace. I can't even believe our parents let us play this. I actually don't think they knew what we were doing. In fact, they probably wouldn't have let us play it then. But there was this huge yellow blanket that we used as a big jump rope. And that thing would start spinning around faster and faster and faster. And the goal was to try to take someone's legs out from underneath them so that they would fall. And then when they did, you use that giant blanket to, like, pummel them with it, to wrap them up with it, and to yank them around the room until they could successfully scramble back onto the couch to bring an end to the round. Now, I know I'm going way, 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 way too far down memory lane here, but the point is this. Every single year as a kid, I could not wait for Christmas. I was all in. Every time, every year, for all of it. The fun, for all the family, for all the activity, for the lights and the trees, the whole deal. I could not get enough of this deal called Christmas. Now fast forward to this Christmas. If I can be honest with you tonight, if I can just kind of pull back the curtain and be honest, as December rolled around this year, there was a number of moments when I felt like, you know, asking my wife, do we have to do this whole deal? I mean, do we have to, like, go through this whole charade? Do we have to do the tree and the lights? Do we have to do the decorating? Do we have to do the cooking and the baking and then all the eating? I somehow find a way to make that still work. But do we have to do the shopping? Do we have to do all the presents? Do we have to do all the wrapping? Do we have to do this whole deal again? See, as I look back on all the Christmases in the more recent years, I recognize that I'm not necessarily all in every time. I'm not necessarily all in like I used to be. And when I stack these two experiences up against each other, Christmas as a kid and Christmas now, when I stack these two experiences up against each other, I can't help but wonder and ask myself, what changed? I mean, what happened or what is happening that makes such a difference? The simplest explanation, and I realize that maybe it's all too simple, but the simplest explanation is this: I grew up. And I'm not at all saying that Christmas can't be exciting as an adult. I'm not saying that Christmas can't be full of joy as an adult. But sometimes the truth is it changes, and it's not like it once was. The excitement and then the fun and the magic and the wonder of it all isn't the way that we remember it, right? The wonder of it all isn't the same as when we were kids. I think, in fact, that the way kids respond to Christmas is the absolute best. In fact, last year, our daughter, she came to the breakfast table the day after Christmas, December 26th, day after Christmas, and she's crying. Okay, and so like any good parents, Erica and I slipped out our iPhones, and we hit record. And Erica asked Lucy why she was so sad. It's a quick video. Take a look at this.
Why are you crying?
Okay, in case you can't hear it, or in case you can't read the tiny, whatever, Snapchat writing or whatever that Erica used, in case you couldn't hear it or read it, she said, because it's not Christmas anymore. That's why she's crying, right? She's so sad because she, like so many kids, she is so all in for Christmas. And I wish I felt the same way about the whole thing, but I have to admit that this year, at least, I didn't necessarily feel the same way. And maybe the same, I don't know, but maybe the same is true for you. Maybe for some reason, Christmas this year isn't quite like it was last year. Or maybe Christmas this year isn't quite like it was a few years ago. Or maybe Christmas this year isn't like it was for you some long time ago. And really, that leads me to this series that we've been in called The Grinch. For the past month here at Midcurrent Church, we've been in this series called The Grinch, exploring some of the real life things that steal our joy at Christmas. Right? We were talking about, you know, all the stress and all the schedules and all the busyness of our lives this time of year. We're talking about families and all the expectations and sometimes the drama that takes place this time of year. We talked about, sometimes the ghost of Christmas past that comes and haunts us today. And I want to add one to the list tonight, because I think one of the real life things that steals our joy at Christmas is growing older. Right, life gets more complicated when we grow up. We get a little older, we get a little wiser, life goes on, maybe we go to college, we move out on our own, we're starting to launch careers, or maybe we're changing careers, maybe we're starting families, maybe we're raising kids, right? But either way, bills start to pile up, responsibility adds up, stress and anxiety creep up, the pressures of life build up little by little. And I think what happens is this, that December rolls around, and suddenly we don't respond to this thing called Christmas like we used to. And when I started thinking about that, what I realized then is this, that the real joy of Christmas, it's in the response. It's in the responding, right? Christmas is all about responding. In fact, I'd say that Christmas depends on. I'd say that Christmas hinges on, I'd say that the whole thing is actually built upon a single response. You see, it was the very first Christmas 2,000 years ago in a little town called Bethlehem when God first responded to us, when God first responded to you and to me. In a way that means things will never be the same. In a way that means things were changed forever for the better. Here's the way Luke, a physician in the time of Jesus, here's the way he tells that story of God responding to us in very careful detail. It's Luke chapter 2, verses 1 through 6, and here's what he writes. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. And he adds this note. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria. He goes on, and everyone went to their own town to register. Verse 4, so Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and the line of David. And he went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. And she wrapped him in cloths and placed them in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. Right, a baby is born. That's how the story goes. That's the story that we read every year. But behind the scenes, something significant was happening. This wasn't just any old, birth announcement. God was up to something. God was orchestrating something for you and for me. God was responding to something. And looking back on that moment that changed everything, here's now what Paul, a guy who wrote the majority of the New Testament, here's what Paul had to say about it all. He said, "But when the right time came, God sent his son born of a woman." He says, when the right time came, it was intentional. It was strategic. It was calculated. When the time was right, God sprang into action. And God responded, and he sent his son. And so the big question is then, what made this time right? The big question is, why did God respond this way, and what was he responding to? Let me see if I can fill you in here. Up until that point, and ever since the very beginning, God was trying to get the attention and get the affection of people. And God chose Jews to be the people who would help make that happen on earth. He said he would make himself known to the whole world through them. He promised to bless them and then to bless the whole world through them. And that's why he entered into several agreements, right? You might have heard them called covenants. That's why he entered into these agreements with them. And really, they were agreements that these people kept breaking. God makes a promise and he passes on some instructions for them to follow, and then they always came up short. And so what does God do? For 2,000 years prior to Jesus, God makes a way for his wayward people. God makes a way for his rebellious people to make up for the fact that they're constantly falling short on their end of the deal. He creates a way for them to go from the naughty list to the nice list. And he does this. He does this through laws and through priests and through prophets and through temples and through rituals and through animal sacrifices. Essentially, he set up this system and said, hey, if you can play by these rules, if you can play in this sandbox, you'll be good to go. But when the right time came, God pulled the plug on that whole deal. When the right time came, God changed the play. He realized that playbook wasn't working any longer, and so he called an audible, and he switched things up, and he sent his son. In other words, from God's perspective, things weren't going according to plan, right? And so it was time to take matters into his own hands. It was time to take things to a whole nother level, because the whole religion thing, the priests and the prophets and the rituals, that whole deal, it wasn't working any longer. It wasn't doing for people what people actually needed most. And so what did God do? God, way up there, he responded to them. He responded to you and to me way down here. Because the world 2,000 years ago, folks, the world didn't need God to send any more laws. The world didn't need God to send any more rules or any more priests or any more prophets or any more rituals or any more animal sacrifices. The world didn't need God to send any more religious hoops to jump through. And folks, let's get real. That's not what any of us need either. That's not what any of us need. That's not what any of us really want. That's not why anyone shows up to church, and it's not what's going to really do any of us any real good anyway, to just have more laws and more rules and more hoops to jump through. It's not what we needed. It's not what was going to do us any good, and God knew that. God, when the time was right, God knew that. And when the time was right, God then did something incredible. Instead of sending another law, he sent his son. And in doing so, He did what none of the laws, what none of the priests, what none of the rituals, what none of the animal sacrifices could ever do anyway. And all of a sudden, a God way up there, a God way far away, became Emmanuel, a God with us all the way down here. All of a sudden, what was just for a select group of people, Jews, became a gift for the entire world. All of a sudden, and this is what we got to understand, happened at Christmas. All of a sudden, a religion became a relationship on that very night. Because up until that point, the only way that you stayed off of the naughty list was jumping through all those hoops, keeping up with all of those laws, playing by all of those religious rules, and doing all the shoulds, and keeping your distance from all of the shouldn'ts. But that just wouldn't do the trick any longer. And maybe it never really did in the first place. And so when the right time came, God showed up to show us something. When the right time came, God staged a demonstration to demonstrate something for us. I want us to see what that something really was. So let's go back to what Paul writes in the New Testament. It's in the book of Galatians where we started, verse 4. He says, "But when the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law." And God sent him, and here's the why of Christmas. Here's why God responded to us the way he did. He says, God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law so that he could adopt us as his very own children. And because we are his children, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, prompting us to call out, Abba, Father. And now you are no longer a slave, but God's child. And since you are his child, God made you his heir. So let's get just real plain and simple. Let's get real clear here. Why did God send his son? Why did God respond to us this way? Why did Jesus come to this earth? Jesus came to this earth at Christmas to do two things. Number one, to buy freedom for us. That's why Jesus came to earth. Jesus didn't come to make bad people good. Jesus came to set captive people free. That's why Jesus came. God sent his perfect son. He sent his perfect son to be subject to the law so that his imperfect children, his imperfect sons and daughters could be free from it, could be free from the penalty of it. Because the truth is, our sin, there was a penalty for it. Our sin enslaves us. Our sin actually leads to death. And so God sent his son to deal with our sin and to buy freedom for us, to buy freedom for you, to buy freedom for me. How? By ultimately dying on a cross, by sacrificing his life for ours. Right? The wages of sin, we read, is death. And so Jesus pays the wages of sin for you and me. That's why Jesus came, right? Jesus did not come to make bad people good. He came to make dead people live, and he came to set captive people free. It's an incredible gift at Christmas, but that isn't it. As if that wasn't the best gift already, there's more. Here's the second thing that happened when Jesus came to earth at Christmas. Number one, he buys freedom for us. Number two, God sent his son to adopt us into his family. God didn't just want us to be free from sin's consequences. He wants us to be in a relationship with him. And in fact, he doesn't want us trapped in a religion about him, but he wants us to choose to be in a relationship with him. To be in a relationship with him, to be in his family forever. And that's what became possible for you and for me and for everyone. That's what became possible at Christmas. God could have sent, if he wanted, God could have sent a revised copy of the law. He could have sent an updated edition of the rule book. He could have commissioned from heaven. He could have commissioned a new version of religion for dummies so that we could finally get it right. But he didn't do that. He didn't send a new law. He didn't send a new playbook. He didn't want a religion. He wanted a relationship. And so he sent a person. He sent his son. He responded personally. And he came and he lived among us. He gave up heaven and he came down to this place called earth. And there he felt every pain that we felt, every frustration, every temptation, every heartache. Because honestly, it was really the only way. Because how would any of us have known where we stood with God if God had not come down and stood with us? But God had to be with us so that we would know. Without a shadow of a doubt, God had to be with us so that we would know he was for us. Because folks, here's the truth. For love to be real, someone had to respond. For love to be real, someone had to respond, and that's exactly what God did on that very first Christmas night. He responded to us, to our situation, to our circumstances right here on earth. He looked at the gap, in fact. He looked at the gap that existed between him and us, and he knew that there was nothing that we could do to close that gap. No matter how hard we tried, no matter how, you know, good we were, no matter how we were on our much we were on our best behavior all the time. He knew there was nothing that we could do to close that gap. And so he did. He closed that gap and he sent his son to fill it. And Christmas came to be right then and there. When God, way up there, responded to us all the way down here. And so the only question then this Christmas is this: how will you respond to him? Tonight it's actually only December 23rd, as we've pointed out, and so you're in luck, right? You actually get a whole extra day to think about it. You get a whole extra day to think about how this Christmas might be different. How this Christmas might be different than last year or the one before or the one before that, to think about how you will respond to him this Christmas. God first responded to us so that we eventually would respond to him. And that's why he took the first step onto our planet as a baby. That's why he took the painful step onto a cross as a man to die for forgiveness. Folks, the next step is for you and me to take. Next step is for you to take, right? You don't need any more religious laws and you don't need any more religious guilt. That's not what God is all about, and that's not what God is offering to you anyway. He's offering you an opportunity to enter into a life-changing, a freedom-purchasing, a sin-forgiving, a guilt-erasing, a burden-lifting relationship with him through his son, Jesus. And so the question then is this: how will you respond this year? Will you say yes to that relationship? This Christmas, will you believe God rather than just believe in God? Will you believe that God loves you? Will you believe that God is for you? Will you believe that God has a plan and a purpose and a future for you? We believe that God's way is best for you. As you look at your life right now, is there a promise of God's that you need to claim this year? Is there a habit that's hurting you or hurting someone else that you need to kick? Is there a sin in your life that you need to avoid? Is there an example that you see in the godly people around you? Is there an example you see in Scripture that you need to follow? I don't know what step is next for you. I don't know where you're at. I don't know what life and faith looks like for you. So I don't know what step is next for you to take, but I hope and I pray that this Christmas you would take a step, some kind of step. My hope is that you would take a step toward a God who first took one giant and cosmic step toward you at Christmas. Let me pray. God, we give you so much thanks for the good news that happened that very first Christmas night, that a baby was born to us so that religion could become a relationship. God, I pray that you would help us here tonight to know how it is that we need to respond to you. God, Christmas is about the way we respond, and you got the whole thing started. And so, God, I pray that you would help each of us here tonight in our own lives, in our own world, in our own families, that, God, that you might just somehow put it on our hearts, God, that you might somehow find a way to get our attention, to let us know what it is, how it is that we could respond to you. God, I hope we would find some way to take a step toward you who first took a step toward us, and I pray that this Christmas might be a whole lot different than any other because of it. I pray that this next year, 2019, might be a whole lot different than any other year because of it. God, we give you so much thanks for the good news of your son, Jesus Christ, who is the most incredible gift we could ever have asked for. And we pray all these things in his incredibly powerful name. Amen.